Radio Newark, the home of Radio Newark Sport. Weeknights from 7. Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
Live from Sport HQ on the show that's all about you. It's time to do this. So, hands up, how many of you know how many runs South Africa won the third test by against Australia? Or, do you know what the score was at the start of day three? Or, did you even know there was a test going on? I bet you do now. There is only one story this weekend. An Australian captain, Steve Smith, has been banned for one match and fined his entire match fee by the ICC for his part in the ball tampering incident in that third test in South Africa. Smith said the team's leadership group had a plan, carried out by batsman Cameron Bancroft, to tamper with the ball to get an advantage. Smith will now miss the fourth and final test of the series, and Bancroft was fined 75% of his match fee. I've had a quick look at these cricket laws, because we do have an umpire in here tonight, but, you know. So I've had a quick look, and I think, if I've got this right, Rule 41.1, the major responsibility of fair play rests with the captains. Smith has admitted not merely cheating, but planning to cheat. Everything else in that ill-tempered series is completely irrelevant. By his own actions, Smith's position as a captain is untenable. And I can't help but think back about 3 months when Smith and Bancroft sat in Sydney gloating about the Johnny Bairstow headbutting incident. Massive great beams all over their face at our expense. Hello, boys. You wasn't smiling on Saturday night and Sunday, was you, when you was being interviewed? And that, of course, has got to be our one and only first subject of the week. Mr. Smith, good evening.
Good evening.
all our Christmases come together on Saturday evening, I think. I'm just going to name drop for a moment, because I was chatting to Matthew Hoggard, ex-England international fast bowler.
He's probably saying the same thing about meeting Mick Bradley.
Well, exactly. I asked Big Matt about the...
Big Matt?
About the incident. His answer is not repeatable for this radio show. If anyone wants to give me a ring, I'll tell you exactly what he said, but I ain't saying it. I ain't saying it on this radio show. There's been an awful lot said, hasn't there, Tony, since then, but let's start this on a serious note and then go back to where we want to go to. Let's give the serious bit first.
Well, I don't see how in the modern era you can even imagine getting away with something like that. Because in the olden days, when the only eyes upon you were from a press box 100 yards away, you know, you could get away with fairly anything. But when you've got a million lenses, you know, not only with the high-powered lenses of the photographers, but with all the television cameras.
Apparently there's 32 television cameras around that ground.
I think the most horrible aspect of it all was when he tried to hide it down the front of his trousers, because he knew that the umpires would ask him to turn his pockets out. It is just ever so sad.
Why do the best team in the world need to cheat? And I don't grasp this, Steve Smith. It's the first time we've ever done it. You don't just become a cheat on day three of an afternoon when you're 28 years old and been playing cricket forever in the same bunch of players that you've been playing with for the last few years. It doesn't just happen.
It's just desperately sad, because the whole thing about cricket is you can quote any laws you like, but the most important law is played within the spirit of the game. And, you know, that is just totally against any spirit of cricket whatsoever.
But it's not only against the spirit of the game, Tony. They have broken the laws.
Yeah.
It was premeditated. Yeah. They sat down and worked out, and if Darren Lehman didn't know about it, he shouldn't be the coach for not knowing about it. And he's done very well by keeping quiet so far, so let's hear what he's got to say. Australia have been painting themselves whiter than white lately when it comes to cricket. They're not. Quite frankly, they are cheats.
Yeah, but the thing is that Smith has wrecked his career. He's already had to stand down from the captaincy of the team that he was captaining in the IPL. His position as captain, it's not just a one-match ban, he's finished.
Well, this is my next gripe. The ICC, a one-match ban? Come on!
That is
scandalous. That's about as bad as ball tampering, that decision.
I wonder if they think that is sufficient punishment, then... You know,
then you can do what you like in cricket.
Then
it will go the same way as some other sports I'm not going to mention, but it will.
The world is in a sorry state of affairs, sporting-wise, if the ICC think that a one-match ban is sufficient.
Smith and Warner shouldn't play Test match cricket again. Full stop, end of conversation.
They should be thrown out of the game.
And whoever else was in this group also needs that. You need to set an example, and you set an example right at the top. If they're cheating right at the top, because that is the word, and that's the word that we don't use in sport, isn't it? The one word that will rile somebody in sport is cheating. They've admitted to it.
Yeah, but as I say, it was just the schoolboy way in which he tried to disguise it by dropping it down the front of his pants. I mean, good God. You know, I mean...
And we all had a thought, didn't we, that we have two of the best fast bowlers in the world, don't we?
Yeah.
Anderson and Broad.
Yeah.
They couldn't get that ball to do anything in Australia. The Australians could get it to reverse swing. Hello! even if it's purely innocent, the question now needs to be asked.
Yeah, it just puts everything about them in question. What I will say is, as a cricket fan, I am absolutely horrified. As an England fan, I think it's hilarious. Fantastic.
Yeah, it is. I think anybody in world cricket, apart from Australians, have said they've had this coming for a long time.
Yeah.
You listen to Swanee and Brodie and Michael Vaughan, and listen to some of the old guys. Michael Clark, the Australian Prime Minister, was distraught.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things that goes beyond the boundaries of sport, and it's pretty embarrassing to be an Australian at the minute.
Where do you deport him to? We certainly don't want him. He's out. He's got to go.
Yeah.
He's got to go. And, you know, it's about time somebody manned up and made that decision now.
Yeah.
Instead of leaving it to everybody else. Because ICC's left it to the Australian Cricket Board, haven't they?
Yeah.
That's what they've done.
But the idea of a one-match ban is derisible. Whereas it should be just banned from the sport, which is besmirched.
Absolutely scandalous. But as Tony quite rightly points out, if you're anybody but Australian, also quite hilarious. Let's have a look at what happened in Newark over the weekend. And Newark Flowserve moved to within three wins of the Notts Senior League Championship after a 6-2 victory over a spirited Gedling South Bank side. Collingham win again and they stay second in the Central Midlands, and Newark gain a valuable point against Innington. Another defeat for the rugby club, 24 points to 10 at Ashbourne, and that sees them to drop to fourth in the table. While South will beat Casuals and they move out of the relegation zone. And it's a busy weekend for our hockey ladies. Two away matches, two victories, 8 goals and none conceded. While the Frees share 6 goals in the local derby against Southlands. Mr Halfpenny points out to me, now he's in temporary charge of the ladies' first team, he's got a 100% record.
This is Radio Newark Sport.
The big match, of course, the massive match, was at Kelham Road on Saturday evening when the RAF Vultures took on the Brian Fisher's International Bob Burns, and it quite frankly was everything it was built up to be. Massive crowd, brilliant rugby, lot of fun and copious amounts of beer drunk, and no hint of a problem anywhere. It went as smooth as clockwork, apart from me getting one of the players' names wrong. Apart from that, it went as smooth as clockwork, and it was a cracking night. And to do that one justice, Alan Swain's coming in tomorrow night so we can have a long chat about it, because I don't want to rush this in a couple of minutes because it's worth an awful lot longer. You was busy on Saturday. You was busy painting your fences and everything at Newell Car&M, but it was quite poignant, wasn't it? Something else that happened at Newell Car&M.
Yeah, it was wonderful. The pavilion was renamed the Chris Grant Pavilion in honour of one of Newark's finest. And it was his widow Doreen was there with his daughter, and it was just a lovely occasion unveiling the plaque. But it was quite emotional. But I've known Chris for a third of a century. Lovely man. And if you had a top table of all the best people that Newark have ever produced, Chris Grant would be on that top table. And it's a great honour for the Callum Road Pavilion to be renamed in his honour.
So that was a nice touch.
It was.
A nice touch.
And it was a good turnout, with everybody getting stuck in with the improvements to the ground that turn it from a dusty old ball into a place ready for the new season.
Okay. Let's try and get the first of our reports. I haven't spoke to him yet, so I hope he's going to be. And we're going to try and get hold of Paul Hyde.
Radio Newark, the home of Newark Sport. Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. with Mick and Tony. Radio Newark, the home of Newark Sport. Missed one of our shows? Don't forget, you can check out the podcasts and get the very latest sports news daily on our website at radionewark.co.uk.
Okay, so to the phone lines, and first up, of course, every Monday night, we talk to Paul Hyde, Station Road at Conyngham. Paul, good evening.
Good evening, Mickey, all right?
I'm very well, thank you, yourself.
Not bad.
Good. A good win at the weekend. Tell us about it.
Struggled to get a side out, to be fair.
Oh, right.
People working.
Mind you, it was 4 and away.
Well, you still have to go there.
You do, yeah. I can understand why people don't want to go, though.
As going as well. Yeah, we went and came up at half-time, and the linesman said, it's something like a training session for you, but we're only 1-0 up. So, it's a big pitch, they're a big side. One or two lads getting on a bit, you know, and so they were digging in rather than just letting lads go past him like the young lads and that. But we, second half, we got our three goals. Chris Funnell got a couple. What was the other one? Let me think. I've gone.
You'll be in trouble again.
Yeah. Sorry. The goal in the first half was Ash Coates, and he hit an absolute screamer to open the scoring to make it 1-0. And then, like I say, in the second half, Chris got two, and Marlon Grundy got one. So that made it 4-0, and we came away with some injuries that are going to, you know, probably jump up and bite us on the backside on Wednesday night coming.
Yeah, we'll get to that one, and that's not... Chris Funnell has hit the ground running, hasn't he? That's five in two games. I assume, though, he's not going to be available for the semi-final.
No.
Hmm.
No, he's not.
That's... part of the football way football works. You have to be signed on for so long before a semi-final, or play so many games, and he doesn't get either, does he?
Yeah. By the way, that final Marlon, sorry, I'm a bit disorientated here at the moment, but he just come in, was Callum Chapman got the fourth goal.
Callum Chapman, so we'll give Callum a...
Yeah, so, like I say, it was a bit of a bloodbath at times, because we did get injuries, which are like a... not help us on Wednesday night, but we have got players back, so although he can't play, then George Aspin will be fit, and so he'll fit in there. So we'll be reasonably set up okay, and we'll have a couple of under-18s in again as well.
So Wednesday night is the floodlit trophy, whichever way you want to look at it, semi-final or Northern final.
Semi-final, yeah.
Yeah, you can. The winner of the Northern section then goes on to play the winner of the Southern section. You're playing Staveley reserves, aren't you? You've already played them this season.
Yeah.
Close match, so it looks like it's going to be a close match on Wednesday as well.
Well, I think it's going to be more difficult on Wednesday because they have a first team who can play, and that they do bring their first team players into the, like we bring our under-18s, you know. Then they bring their players down, and so many of those can play. In fact, I don't think there's any control over it. They can play. They'll have been signed on all season, so we don't know what to expect. They've had one or two bad results recently, so who knows. One's as good as 10 in the cup, so we'll do our best, and that's how we'll go to it.
It always worries me about reserve teams in cup competitions and first teams in other leagues. It's,
yeah, exactly.
It doesn't ring true in my world that it should even be in that league. But
well, that's how things are.
It's not my decision, so...
That's what we've got to face up to, and we've got the ability. I think, it's, you know, I've said many, many times before, the physical side of the game comes in, certainly at Thorn, you know, because they've got guys who were... you know, very slow and really big lads who could just mix it, you know, and knock players off the ball. But big pitch, like I say, you know, you can get the ball and get into the grass and we can do the job. So, yeah, we're going into it looking at that we stand a reasonable chance.
Let's go
and then,
for
of course,
it.
We've got them again in the League Cup, which will be played at Clipston.
Yes, it will, won't it? Yes.
And we'll play them again. But going off of that and back onto the under-18s, sounds as I'm banging on about them a bit, but they'd won that game at 5-1 last week, and then they've got 10 players in the county squad on Saturday.
So the game they won 5-1, was that the semi-final?
That was the semi-final, yeah.
Excellent.
Gone to the county on Saturday, 3 minutes to go, they 1-0 down, end up winning 2-1. Will Corner scored for the county, and then Jack Durkin took the last minute penalty and scored for make it 2-1. So that was another good weekend again for the lads in Collingham.
And a good weekend all round. Well, let's hope we can have a good Wednesday night, Paul, because that's all eyes turned to Wednesday night now. So
that's right.
We'll find out how we get on. We'll try and talk to somebody at the ground before kick-off to see how everything is. And then I've got Jerry and Emma coming in on Thursday night, so I've got no doubt Jerry will pass his opinion of it as well.
Yeah, well, we've got, they're coming in thick and fast, aren't they? We've got them on Wednesday, and then we've got Claycross, who are still fancied to probably get up there and, you know, definitely be in the top four and could even go into second place. But we're second at the moment, so we've got to play them on the Saturday.
And that's Claycross on Saturday. Well, I think we'll pop out and have a look at you on Saturday.
All right, mate, that'd be great.
All right, Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Paul Hyde there on another good win for Collingham. And I say that floodlit cup semi-final, 7:45, Station Road, this Wednesday night. Get along there, support the Collingham lads. Phone call number two, and of course 7:20 on Monday means it's Craig Roach and the all-conquering Newark Flowserve. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening, mate.
It's getting very... Even you've got to admit now it's all over by the shouting. Come on.
Nearly taste it now.
Thank you. Eight points needed from what, 10 games or something silly?
Nine games.
Yeah. Just to make it harder for yourself. Also, we've dropped two points at the weekend. So a 6-2 victory at home to Gedling South Bank on paper. Just another game and the victory that it should have been. But it was interesting at one stage because, as I understand it, you sort of breezed into a 2-0 lead and then sort of went to sleep for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, early in the second half we did. Yeah, I mean, the first half we was... totally dominant. We could have walked in at half time 6 or 7 up without any complaints, but we didn't. It was 2-0 at half time. Dangerous scoreline, as everyone knows, which we said to the lads, and we paid for that in the second half. Early in the second half, one lapse of concentration at the back let them in, to make it 2-1, and then literally from the kickoff, they got a penalty. We conceded a penalty, so that was 2-2 within 2 minutes. But from there on, we carried on as we left off, got our head switched on again, and we're 3-2 up again 5 minutes later, and went on, like you say, to win 6-2.
Win 6-2, and it was another 3 points in the bag. Very quickly, so I just want to go on to something else in a minute, Craig. Very quickly, the reserve. I know you play at San Diego in the next step towards the championship on Wednesday, but the reserves, a quick mention then, that they play in the League Cup semi-final at Calverton against Woodthorpe. With the opposition crying off at 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, the reserves haven't now played a football match for 5 weeks, and they're playing against the team at the top of the table. We're wishing the best of luck, but it's going to be a hard evening for them.
Yeah, they've got a very tough ask on Wednesday night. You know, Woodthorpe seems to be a very strong side. They're getting good results week in, week out. I think they've only lost one all season. Like you said, preparation for our lads hasn't been great. Lack of activity over the last month due to the weather and team calling off, not having side like Saturday was just, you know, he's like, I can't believe what's going to happen next. The lads just can't go a game in.
No.
Good luck to him, but they've got some good lads, you know, and it's a cup match.
It's a one-off match, and it's a cup match.
Just wish them all the best, and all they can go out and give it the best shot and see how they get on.
Now, as you know, we spoke to the chairman last week, and he says everything's in place, and I went trip down there on Saturday morning to have a look for myself, and it's as near as damn it, and a bit of hard work this week. It will be in place for when they come and do the ground grading. Assuming everything goes to plan, there is a predicted East Midlands Counties League format for next season doing the rounds. Now, please nobody take this as gospel. It is what potentially is the East Midlands Counties League for next season. The FAR moving things around a bit, trying to just regionalise things a little bit more. And the rumour has it that most of the Leicester-based clubs in the East Midlands counties are going into the United Counties. If that's the case, the East Midlands Counties League at Step 7 could look like this. Listen to some of these names in this. And I tell you what, if it's nearly right, Craig, I can't wait. Arnold Town, Clifton Allwhites, Clipston, Dunkirk, Bolsover, Gedling Miners, Harrowby, Holbrook, Hull Sports. That's a beautiful ground to go to, by the way, Craig.
Yeah.
Ilkeston, Kimberley Miners, Ollerton, Radford, Selston, Sherwood, Shirebrook Town, Skegness Town, South Normanton and West Bridgeford. Craig, if that's anywhere close to what they are saying they're thinking it's going to be, that's going to be one hell of a winter for you.
It's an exciting looking league, yeah, I did see that. And we'd be very happy if we was amongst them. I'm sure a lot of the other teams would in there.
If you was part of that company next season, ProServe have made it. You're going to be playing...
Like say, some big clubs there, some nice grounds, and then be a very competitive league.
Ollerton and Harrowby, I mean, there's two local derbies.
Yeah. Some cracking local derbies,
you know,
yeah.
And then you're going to go to, you know, to Arnold Town and Skegge. You'll never get you lot back from Skegge.
Ilkeston was at home Saturday. They had 1,900 there nearly.
So, you know.
At home game, so.
Fingers crossed.
Might have to get a bigger stand built quickly.
Yeah, you better tell them to get some more wood bought. But if that is going to be the East Midlands Counties for next season, bring it on.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, it's all
ifs and buts.
In the sky in a little bit in a minute.
Yeah,
but, as a proposal, it looks pretty exciting.
I'll settle for anywhere near that. Anyway, let's get this 31st out of the way first. Right, Craig, best of luck to both teams on Wednesday night. We won't catch up with you next Monday because it's obviously Bank Holiday Monday. We'll let you have a night off.
Yeah, if results go our way this week, we could wrap it up on Saturday. South will do us a favour on Wednesday night.
When we talk to you again, you're going to be champions.
I hope so.
And even then, you've got to, and then you'll have to admit it.
Yeah.
Craig, thank you so much.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks, Craig. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. South will do us a favour. That's a novelty. Right. A very, very quick Tony roundup of, you know, we like a bit of a football roundup, yeah. Don't we? This is going to be very quick. Newark Town drew 1-0 with Dinnington. Callum Johnson scoring the goals. Both goals within 50 seconds of each other in the first half. Ricky Hunter was going to talk to us tonight, but his daughter's not very well at all, so we wish her the best to get fit again soon. The National League North. At 80 minutes, it was Kidderminster 4, Salford City 1. At 4-0. At 89 minutes, it was Kidderminster 4, Salford City 1. Time the game had finished, it was a 4-4 draw. Salford equalised with a penalty in the, sometime about 8 o'clock at night, which was saved, so he tapped in the rebound. And me, I'm not bitter and twisted in any way, shape or form, but the fact is that there's five of Man United lot running Salford, and the originally Fergie time, put the two and two together, and it was obvious it was going to happen. Boston won at Chorley, they're going to be safe. Gainsborough lost again, they're in trouble. They look like they're going down. Seven games left and 5 points off safety. That's beginning to ask a lot. Back-to-back wins have put Grantham back on in the playoff positions. They've gone up to fourth. Danny Meadows scored twice as they won 4-1 over Barwell. Lots of games to come, though. Northwich have got 19 games in 40 days to play to get their season finished. 19 in 40. They're playing Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. It's crazy. Absolutely. Shaw Lane lost again.
Are you sure that's not Nantwich?
Well, it's the same place. Shaw Lane lost. I don't come from up north. Shaw Lane lost again and they've sacked their manager.
Have they?
He's gone. And the FA Vars final is Stockton Town against Thatcham. And the trophy final is Bromley against Brackley. Bromley mid-table in the National League, Brackley third in the Northern section. And finally, a bit of Scottish football, because I thought this was absolutely brilliant. Inverness Cali Thistle.
Yes.
They actually won the Scottish Challenge Cup at the weekend.
Against Dumbarton.
Right, OK. They've got a new mascot.
Cali have?
Yes. I think it's brilliant. It's a sort of it's a monster, and they've called it Lionel Nessie.
Radio Newark, the home of Newark Sport. Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. with Mick and Tony. Radio Newark, the home of Newark Sport. Missed one of our shows? Don't forget you can check out the podcasts and get the very latest sports news daily on our website at radionewark.co.uk.
We've changed Rob and Paul around for reasons I'll tell you a little bit later on. So we're now going to talk to our coach of the year, Mr. Paul Halfpenny. And he's proved once again why he is the coach of the year, because the ladies' ones had an horrendous weekend. Saturday morning they had to go to Ashbourne, and Sunday morning they had to go to Market Harborough. Mr. Halfpenny, how did they get on?
Well, nobody got travel sick, which was good. and they did really well. I keep speaking with rose-tinted glasses, you know, about the team of old, the cup-winning team, the double-winning team. But this team, this weekend, from what I saw, was by far better than that team. They were absolutely outstanding. You know, to say that Ashbourne are second in the league, I knew they'd be a force to be reckoned with when they won the Derbyshire League last year. But we battered them. We absolutely battered them. 1-0 at half time, and we missed a lot of chances. They had their chances, but clean sheet against second in the league and 3 points. Absolutely fantastic. And then Sunday we go off to Market Harborough. They're scared of being relegated, but I don't think they can now. But again, I was expecting a tough battle. We were 2-0 up against them at home, and they brought it back to 2-2. And we just absolutely, with a bare 11 players and one of my wonderful third 11 players standing in to make 11, we railroaded them. They never looked in the game. We absolutely battered them, and we were good for our five. In fact, it should have been more than 5-0, to be honest with you, but brilliant, brilliant performance. And another clean sheet.
If the results go in your favour, you could end up being runners-up.
Ashbourne travelled to Market Harborough on the same day that Loughborough students travelled to us. That could be a tricky trip for Ashbourne because there's nothing to play for apart from prestige of being second in the league. And it's a fair old trek from Ashbourne to Market Harborough. So I'll be surprised if they get a full first team out. Market Harborough are still thinking they can be relegated. So I wasn't going to change that. I thought, well, that might do us a favour if we beat Ashbourne. So, yeah, it depends if we can get a team out, though, as well. Because it is through the Easter holidays. So,
yes, but you are at home.
We are at home. We are at home, but as it stands at the moment, that doesn't really mean anything if people are going away.
And we've got a double header, haven't you? The 7th and the 8th, Loughborough, and then the champions, Burton, the next day.
Yeah, we seem to have a good team out against Burton. If we can draft a few more players in against Loughborough, I'm hoping that the students have all gone home for Easter.
Well, of course, that's the other thing, isn't it? Yes, they yeah, shouldn't be there, so they should struggle.
So, hopefully, yeah, and you're absolutely right. If Ashbourne mess up and only manage a draw or a loss against Market Harbour and we win both our remaining fixtures, then yeah, we will finish second in the league.
It could set Sunday the 8th up to be a cracking match.
It could well be, yeah. I have a bit of a dilemma though on the Saturday because both the men's first team and the ladies' first team are playing at exactly the same time at two different venues.
Ah, right, well, now you've got a problem.
Yes.
You're not answering the problem either.
Yes, and it will be solved. That problem will be solved.
I'm sure you'll figure something out. A quick trip through the rest of the ladies' twos. Lost on Saturday 3-1 to Worksop. They was playing again yesterday against Trent Uni. I don't know the result of that one though, Paul.
Yeah, sadly it didn't go in our favour. It was a 5-0 defeat. To be honest with you, Nottingham Trent University are so up and down. You don't know where you are with them. One minute they'll put an exhilarating performance in and absolutely railroad somebody, and then next thing they lose to somebody who you think, how did that happen? You know, it's bizarre team. So I think Nottingham Trent are good for their mid-table, and of course the ladies' twos are safe. They're not going to go anywhere now. So that's
what we've said on countless times. When you set out at the beginning of the season what you want them all to do, Ladies 2's objective is to maintain Premier Division status.
That's correct, yeah. And a higher status than previous years, which is what we've done.
So that's good. The threes drew 3-3 in a bit of a local derby.
Yes, unfortunately I couldn't be there. The men's fixture sort of screwed everything up, really, for the head coach. He couldn't get to any other game, so... didn't get to see my beloved ladies, but yes, they did very, very well away at Brincliffe because Brincliffe are riding a little bit high in that league with games in hand. So, yeah, very, very good result. I can't think offhand who scored, but nevertheless, coachless, a very, very good result.
They're still third in the table, the ladies' threes, and I've got their last match is the home game against Southall Brincliffe. So.
Games left. One isn't listed.
No, I couldn't. No, that's right. I was trying to add up last night and couldn't figure that one out.
I've got a sneaking feeling it's the same weekend as the double header with the ladies' first team. I think it's that weekend and they're playing Boots.
And then they've got to wait until the 21st, which seems an awful long way off.
That's because Southall Brincliffe have got every single week in April playing games because they've called so many off.
Well, they should... Yeah. Ladies' fours lost 6-4 at Redhill. Redhill sort of second in the table. Sounds an entertaining game. Defence is on top.
Very, very disappointing, really, because if they'd beat Redhill and beat Arnold, then there was that... Well, glaring opportunity to get promotion because they have to play Redhill twice. Well, they had to play Redhill twice, Arnold once, and I think they might have one more fixture. And of course, win all the games they would have been promoted. It was totally in their hands, but now I'm afraid they can't get promoted. So just coast out the season, I think, now.
And the men, well, the quicker the season finishes, the better.
Well, actually, you know, you look at the 7-2 scoreline, and there's a South African, well, there's a couple of South Africans that play for North Knots, a guy called Will Butler, and it's Will Butler's drag flicks that did all the damage. They pretty much, until the end of the match, scored every penalty corner they got. You've got Newark players diving out the way of the balls. It's coming searing at the heads. So take away the four penalty corners that North Knots scored, and the 3-2 scoreline, as opposed to a 7-2 scoreline, was what it actually was. Newark were on top. Newark were actually on top. First 10-15 minutes, we were playing some wonderful hockey. Sam Smith scored both our goals. He always looked dangerous, and he was given some really rough treatment, which went totally unpunished on several occasions. But we were really, really in that game the whole way through, and it's such a demoralising scoreline, really. You know, if we got our own little Will Butler, you know, who could put away penalty corners, I'm sure it would have been a different season. But unfortunately, it's not. But the one thing I can say is that in this league, looking at North Knots, who lie third, we are very, very competitive. The only team, two teams that have really destroyed us, and we've got no answer, were Derwent and Repton, especially Repton away from home. So the rest of the teams, we just didn't finish, and they did. And we've been very, very competitive. I'm not too downbeat about this season. It does get a bit frustrating when you turn up week in, week out, and getting nothing out of the game. But the way that the guys are playing is really promising for next season.
Keep those together and keep that ladies' first team together, and it's going to be in a cracking season. I'm lying. I've enjoyed this one, so we'll see. We're not with you next Monday night, Paul, so we'll give you Easter off, and catch up with you all again in a couple of weeks' time.
Look forward to it.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Thanks. Bye. Bye. Pull that one up, pull that one down. One's red, one's green. It's not difficult, is it? Before we go to Rob Wildman, who's live at the Girls Midlands Cup final for us, which is why it's sort of doing it a little
bit later.
It's 0-0 at the moment, not that I'm keeping one eye on it. A couple of comments come in about the cricket, and John Marshall saying that if you get, for drugs, if you can get 5 or 10 years, surely one match for something as trivial as ball tampering is okay. But on the face of it, yes, he's right, isn't he? But this is cricket we're talking about, and there's just something there that I can't put into words. You probably can.
Well, it's a phrase, isn't it? An accepted phrase. It's just not cricket. And, you know, I mean, that is in the opening the English language. It just goes against the grain of everything that is considered decent. It really is horrific. And I just say, it is very, very sad. The only light at the end of the tunnel is that it's Australians who are messing up. And
you can't stop laughing, can you, really?
That is brilliant. No, it's just very, very, very sad.
I mean, I'll still stick to what I said right at the top of the show, that Smith and Warner should be hung out to dry. Mm. What about Bancroft? I mean, that is another thing that annoys me immensely. They found the youngest member of the team, the kid, if you like, to do the dirty work for them.
Yeah, I just don't think Bairstow headbutted him hard enough. Might have knocked some sense into the lad. Yeah, he's been stitched up somewhat chronic. But, I mean, that's what cheats do. They put up a scapegoat, don't they? And hide behind it. And it's just so far from the game of cricket that I love that it really is offensive.
Does it happen at Newark's level and Collingham's level and Morrison's level?
Not on this umpire's watch.
Seriously, does it?
No. No, I don't think... I honestly don't think that players at the level that I'm umpiring at, I think they've got far more far more respect for the game itself. And, you know, it's something that I love getting together to do with their mates, but I didn't get one cross word last season in 20 matches of umpiring. It was just a breeze.
You see, all this, they claim, has come about because the sledging's gone up another degree and it's about the wives and the families. The two of them's had to be pulled apart, haven't they, on the balcony. It's... They've let sledging go on for that long, of which Australia are the chief culprits for.
Yeah.
The next move on to sledging is physical.
Yeah, I mean...
And it's moved on from there. And, you know, this is the outcome of letting it just ride.
As an umpire, you know how far to let sledging go. Sledging at its best is very, very funny, if you do it properly. It's hilarious, and everybody who hears it ends up laughing. It's when it starts getting personal and very insulting, that's when you step in and go, right, that's enough, lads. You know, and you sort of... It's just common sense as to how far you let it go, but at the top level, it's a different game.
Yeah, it's... We'll see. When we talk again next week, I'm sure... Everything will have been sorted out. David Pipes is actually in this studio next Tuesday night. And I'm sure David's going to have some... Well, I've actually seen some of David's opinions on Facebook. It's going to be an interesting night. It was talking local cricket. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. And not just a weekend roundup. We're now going to live sport. The Midlands Under-18 Rugby Girls Cup Final. Attempt number 3 to play it. Out at Leicester Forest. Is it on the 4G, Rob?
We're on the 4G, Mick.
We're on the 4G, so we've got Rob Wardman out there. We've sent him all the way to Leicester at major expense to have a look at this for us. Rob, what we all want to know, how's the girls getting on?
We've played probably about 12 minutes, Newark Lee 5-0. Megan Stevens got a try, the winger, out in the corner. And as you ring us, Mick, I've got bad news because old Northamptonians have parked themselves in the Newark 22 and they're just held up. So Newark still leads 5-0. Old Northamptonians have the pressure and they've now got a scrum back, 5 metre scrum in the Newark 22. So that's the news that on 5-0. We've played about 12 minutes and it was a scrappy start. How long can I bumble on for?
You can bumble on all night for us, Rob.
Anyway, so scrappy start, but it's picking up. One or two good runs. Newark got into the game. Number 6, Molly Thornton. Good run on the back of the scrum. Got Newark going. That led to the try. Megan Stevens out wide, 5-0. Anya Richardson, excellent run. She helped make the try. So it was good stuff. But now all Northamptonians, they're attacking. And again, they're a bit short. Moving the ball left now into the corner. I think they're going to get there. Yes, it's 5-5. They've deserved that. They've had a good spell of pressure in the Newark 22. So it's 5-5, and we've played about 14 minutes.
Okay. So while they do the conversion, we find out what's going off. Let's have a quick look back. We're going to concentrate on what is probably the most memorable night ever at Kelham Road with Alan.
There was probably the most... glorious number of thick heads in the morning, yes.
I can imagine. Alan was saying that it's a record amount of beer bought and none of it was going back.
No. I think a tremendous night. I got there in time for the curry and it was an excellent night. The game was a very good game. The RAF Vultures won 19-15. Far more of a competitive game than anyone thought. I think they slugged it out and it was a good old-fashioned game of rugby. We were talking about it last night. And as I speak, old Northamptonians have missed a kick. So it is 5-5. Neither team have got a kicker. 5-5. We're on the 4G pitch and we're going back. Yeah.
What's it? I was told that Mansfield under 15 girls won on the 4G pitch. It was true and it was fast and apparently very enjoyable to play on.
Where should we start on this one, Michael? You know, with the RFU have invested the thick end of. Probably £700,000 in each of these pitches. The one at Leicester Forest, the building one at the Derby ground in for the three counties. Each county, or each major county in the country, is getting a 4G pitch. And the one for Leicestershire has been built here at Leicester Forest, which is a If you know your Leicestershire rugby, I came here a long time ago. Old Bosworthy has played here. I think that they're now an amalgamated club. So they're fantastic facilities. And as I speak, I've got bad news for Newark because all Northamptonians have broken away and their winger has scored in the corner and it's 10-5. So Newark are now down 10-5. Some poor midfield defence, which probably they're taking up to the first team.
I think Will's doing better when we wasn't talking to you.
Yes, you probably are the unlucky
home. Newark lost at Ashbourne, didn't they, on Saturday? Because there was a league match played as well, didn't they? Newark went to Ashbourne.
Fair play the first and second. They were not to Ashbourne. The first lost, not a great performance by all counts. I think it's 24-10 from memory. We got two tries. Alex Henderson and Matt Clark got the tries, but perhaps another away performance, which won't go down in the annals of history now.
Another one to forget about.
We're struggling now to get that playoff place. We've got three league games left. The lads have got a two-week break over Easter, and then we don't play the April 7th weekend. And again, kicking's not the highest here, because it's still 10-5, and the old Northamptonian's kicker didn't really trouble the goalpost.
Southwell won, they beat Casual, so they're out of the relegation zone, because now the local derby's out of the way. I would quite like Southwell to top up, because it is makes
absolutely
two cracking weekends.
Yes.
We're all Southwell fans now till the end of the season. I want to just take you up north for two reasons, Rob. One is the £700,000 pitches. There is one going in at Whitley Bay Rockcliffe, where the boys play. They're going to start that in about 3 weeks' time, apparently. But where I should have been on Saturday, but Mr. Swain persuaded me otherwise, was taking them to see the Falcons play Northampton at St. James's Park.
Absolutely, no. Tremendous occasion. Fair play to Newcastle. I never thought they would get... I think it's beyond their wildest dreams to get, a crowd of 30,000?
30, just over 30,000 supporters for that match.
An incredible achievement by the Newcastle club. I take my hat off to them. I never thought they would do it, but they promoted the game. Obviously, it was a non Premiership Saturday. The Premiership people chose the weekend right. Obviously, we had the game at the London Olympic Stadium. Saracens and Harlequins attracted an incredible crowd of, I think, nearly 50,000. So these one-off games in big football stadiums, do attract probably a different rugby crowd. Bath and Leicester are playing at Twickenham in 2 weeks' time, and another game that's likely to attract 40,000-50,000 people. The big gate pullers.
A couple more things from that game, Tony. You'll like this. I'm going football now, Rob. The Newcastle Falcons wore black and white stripes.
Yes, no, I saw
that. And the same, obviously, as the football team. And they had one try scorer, and when he scored the try, he celebrated the same as Alan Shearer used to do, in front of the Gallagate end with his fist up. I mean, it's brilliant.
It's attracted a lot of publicity, that Gonover scoring. Yeah, the Fijian, obviously, he's an ex-Leicester player. He's Gonover, and obviously, if Leicester keep winning, and I think Newcastle should beat Worcester in the next round of games, Leicester have got to get some points down at Bath, and that will set up Leicester v Newcastle mid-April. Both Leicester and Newcastle going for that fourth spot for the playoff.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's we started off talking about the cricket, but it's lovely to end on sport as it should be played, and everybody's enjoying it, and it was fantastic. Rob, you're gonna just keep sending us the messages, can you? And we'll put it out on our social media later on how the girls are getting on.
The 10-5 down, and we've played probably about 20 minutes now, and we're back in a midfield scrum.
Okay, Rob, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Bye. Rob Wardman there at Leicester Forest East with the bad news that the wonderful girls are losing. Come on, that can't happen and can't keep it. That Falcons thing I thought was brilliant. I spoke to young Finley on the metro on the way home, and the fact that Falcons played in black and white stripes was, it's nice though, isn't it? I'll pull that up for you.
It's a cracking touch.
It really is. So that was nice. And I can imagine this sort of square-shouldered Fijian doing his Shearer-esque. Again, that's
That's a great piece of promotion.
Yeah.
Because, like, sort of, the idea of playing in black and white stripes is just absolutely brilliant promotion. Because, you know, there are very few people that like football and rugby union equally. But that's going to win a lot of converts to the Falcons cause, yeah.
Isn't it just? Anyway, the remainder of this week. This week, even though you are going to be going part-time, but you're going part-time for a reason. We'll come to that in a moment. on tomorrow night, you name me another show anywhere that in the space of an hour has a primary school cup-winning team in the studio, the president of the biggest sports club in the area in the studio, and England bowling international Matthew Hoggard. In 1 hour, we go from the primary school winners, Tutor Reed, retained the trophy on Saturday morning. They're all coming back to see us. Then we're talking to Alan Swain. And then we're talking to Matthew Hoggard. And obviously the Matthew one is a recording from Saturday night. I did ask him about Australia. That I've had to scrub. But I asked him about T20 against test matches. You can wait until tomorrow night to find out the answer to that one. But it was interesting, to say the least. I also asked him about Kevin Peterson. And that was barely repeatable. So, that one. Wednesday night, you're going to do a bit of live commentary for us. You're off to San Diego against FlowServ, when FlowServ can all but win the championship. So you're off there to watch that one for us, and we're going to give you a quick phone call at about 10 to 8 to see if there's going to be any early goals in that one.
I better remember my mobile phone, aren't I?
You better remember your mobile phone, or she'll be in serious trouble. In the studio, Amber Owens and Gareth Bagley. We've got a bit of a surprise for Amber Wednesday night to find that one out. You can listen to the podcast. And then on Thursday night, Jerry's coming back, Jerry Williams. More to the point this time, he's bringing his daughter, Emma. Emma is now physio at Radcliffe Olympic. She was at Newarktown for a long time. She's now at Radcliffe Olympic. But I want to know, because when I was a kid, you used to have a bucket of cold water and a sponge. And that's what made you better. And then you used to get the magic spray out. And that's what made you better. But they don't do any of that now, do they? So I want to have a chat with Emma to find out what the physio's role is these days, because the magic sponge is gone.
Well, are you sure it's gone completely, or is it used alongside better technology?
Well, I've not seen them running out with it, so I think it's gone completely. But you can tell me on Wednesday night. Has Craig Roach got a bucket of cold water there? I don't think you'll find that he has. I really don't. And a quick plug for next Tuesday. You're away again on live sport duty. David Pipes in the studio. And with what's broke this weekend with the cheating Aussies, it's going to be an interesting conversation with David. Because if you think I'm outspoken, and if you think Tony's outspoken, you haven't heard what David thinks yet. And by next Monday, somebody might have had to kick him out of cricket for life.
Yeah.
We will see. Until next Monday. Coming up, Eddie Crampton, Annie Turner. Enjoy.